Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. When we talk about the stress and anxiety that the COVID-19 pandemic has created, we tend to focus on the adults, people worried about the demands of their jobs, the loss of their jobs, the safety of their work environments, and they're concerned about their health as well. But what about the children? Many of them are experiencing high levels of stress and anxiety, too. Their routine of leaving home to go to school is gone. They're not able to see their friends and play with them like they used to. Many of the fun places they used to go are closed, and they're witnessing how their caregivers are struggling. So right now, we're going to spend some time talking about the mental health of children and teenagers and what we can do to help them get through this tough time. I want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. You can join the conversation by calling us at 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. I have two guests joining me now on the line. We've got Bobby Wegner, and Bobby is a clinical psychologist and lecturer in human development and psychology at Harvard University. She's also a parenting writer and the co-founder of a virtual platform that provides support to parents. She's joining us from Boston today. Hello, Dr. Wegner.
Hi, Angela. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for making time for us. I appreciate it. We also have on the line Anne Garrity, and Anne is a clinical social worker who has worked with children and families for decades. She's also an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Dr. Garrity.
Good morning, Angela.
So how do we even begin to describe how our kids are doing as we live through these very strange times? Dr. Wegner, I'll begin with you. How do you begin to describe it?
Sure, of course. Well, it's really not a one-size-fit-all thing, like many things in our culture. This affects some families more than others. But what we do know is that we see so much stress and anxiety already before COVID that affects kids and families, and COVID has really just ripped the doors off of that for many families. It touches everybody, and we are seeing the effects on our children between anxiety, stress, sadness, loss, mourning, grief, kind of all of the above.
You know, I kind of like to say sometimes, I think the toddlers are winning. Because I see so many kids in distress, you know, sometimes just taking walks. And, you know, what are some of the signs that kids are struggling, particularly the little ones? What would we see?
Yeah, well, it's different. I'm glad you brought that up because anxiety and emotional issues present differently across a lifespan. So for little kids, it can be sort of, you know, behavior changes. Kids express themselves through their behaviors. Like they don't have the words and the understanding to know what's going on, but they really feel everything. So little kids might be crying more or acting out or might seem kind of not tuned in at all. Elementary kids can seem a little bit more irritable. It's also pretty normal for them to be enjoying this time. So I have three kids myself, 11, 9, and 6, and they actually are loving this time, which is not in line with experience as parents. And older kids, there's a lot of loss of graduation, loss of time with friends at a time when being social is part of their emotional development. Mm-hmm. So it's really developmentally against what they should be doing and what they want to be doing.
And so again, with signs, what about teenagers? I have two teenagers in my house. What are you seeing or hearing about how they're coping?
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of different depending on the kid. I think some kids kind of enjoy being home, but if kids are more in distress, like irritability for teenagers is usually the common way of communication. So I'm sure if you have teenagers, you know they're not going to sit down with you and just, you know, pour out their emotions, but they're going to be snappy and acting out and potentially pulling away, hiding out their room, on their screens more, you know, and hopefully finding other ways to connect with their friends. Technology in this at this time is actually pretty useful for teenagers. But, you know, I think irritability, sadness, if there's any change in sleep, eating, appetite, energy, those are kind of hallmark things that might reflect more anxiety or depression.
Dr. Garrity, how do you begin to describe how our kids and teenagers are doing as we live in these very strange times?
Well, I'd like to go back to that anxiety is normal. And I think that's really important. We're all supposed to have anxiety. It's a biological or physiological way that we manage stress and danger. And so I always want to start with that point because I think it helps us see that when something like COVID happens, with all the things you described, Angela, we're going to have a heightened sense of danger. Children become particularly anxious in a painful way when they don't know how to master. And none of us know how to master COVID. So as Bobby is saying, we really are looking at how do we help children master their daily life, their daily activities, their daily disruptions in ways that allow them to feel like they can create some safety amidst this, you know, very strange and difficult time. And I think that's where parents are so important because we know that when stress is too much or it goes on for too long, children have depleted resources. So they're really looking to the adults in their life to shore them up, to provide more help than usual.
And it's difficult because the adults in their lives right now, I mean, we're dealing with stress and anxiety as well with the awareness. I'm like, yeah, they're watching me. So it is a tough spot for a child to be in.
Well, the one advantage that we have is that we're all experiencing the same thing. So I've often said to parents to blame things on COVID. And, you know, that really helps children make sense of this. So if you have a toddler who's having or a preschooler who's having more emotional collapses or a school-age kid who's really frustrated, it's such a kindness to say this is happening because of COVID. And that COVID makes it so hard for all of us. And we got to figure out COVID. I think I'm seeing families that can pull together to this common danger doing much better than families who are sort of, you know, becoming prickly and disappointed with each other. So right now we're all struggling with COVID, and that gives us some commonality and some strength.
So as a family, we have to look at it like we are a team and we're all,
you know,
I tell my kids, like, I miss my friends too.
Exactly. And that message helps enormously. More families, when they can own that, their kids don't feel like something's happening to them. It's something that's happening to all of us together.
And Dr. Wettner, would you add to that?
Yeah, I'm really glad Dr. Garrity brought that up. Just that anxiety. Our response is a normal response to an abnormal event. And I also think it provides a lot of opportunity for families. So, you know, this is a shared cultural experience, and I can see it with my patients. I can see it with my family. I can see it with my friends. You know, the emotions that I experience week to week, other people are experiencing too. So it really kind of broadens this, the circle of care or like the ability to connect with people both within our family, but outside of our family. And I think a lot of parents don't necessarily have the language themselves to kind of dive into these really emotional conversations that can be connecting with their children. But we're living it right now. So what you're feeling, if you can find words to it and just name it and notice it and say it to your kid, they'll say me too. And so there's actually real opportunity to kind of develop deeper relationships through this. And if we really want to think about COVID as, you know, a cultural trauma, and we know close connected relationships are what mediate future mental health outcomes. So if you're going to prioritize anything through this as a family, it's like, how can you get more connected to your kid during this time? Because that's going to be, you know, a secure base from them. And it will just feel good for you as a parent and for you as a kid.
And Dr. Garrity, I hear you saying back there. Would you add to that?
Absolutely. I think that's the message. Is that we all need to get more connected. So children will do better if they feel connected to their parents or if they can feel connected to their adults. The children who are really struggling are the ones who can't keep that connected, so they get flooded with their own fears, and then they don't know how to tell their story.
Right.
One of my favorite phrases right now is to ask children, what's happening to you now? Just what's happening to you? Mm-hmm. And even younger children can put something into words when they don't feel like they're in trouble or they've done something wrong. That sympathy, what's happening for you right now, is really a way to help parents move into, as Bobby said, this sort of culture of language versus culture of anxious behaviors. And the more that we can name it, the better the children will manage it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the mental health of children and teenagers during the COVID-19 mm-hmm. pandemic. I have two guests on the line, two experts in this topic. And I want to hear from our listeners as well, because I know that many of you are living this right now. And so we have the phone lines open. If you want to call with a question or share a story, you can. The number is 651-227-6000, or you can leave me a message on Twitter as well. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. In Hermantown, Bob is on the phone right now, and let's bring Bob into the conversation. Good morning to you.
Good morning. My question is related to my granddaughter. She is she was always a little difficult to get her to do well in school. She's smart, but she doesn't like to work that much. And well, she used to have volleyball hanging over her head. They wouldn't let her play volleyball unless her grades were up. Now that she's home, it's really hard for my daughter-in-law to get her to do her schoolwork. And I think it's almost over now, but I don't know how to deal with how they are going to deal with that if this is still going on next fall.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's Bob in Hermantown, concerned about his granddaughter. This distance learning, trying to do schoolwork from home, has been a challenge for everyone, for teachers, for parents, and for the kids. And so our two guests, what are you hearing, or what do you suggest to help children manage the stress and anxiety of their schoolwork when they can't go to school? Dr. Wegner?
Yeah, you know, Bob, I'm glad you brought that up. That's a very, very common thing I think parents are struggling with. They feel this added responsibility to focus on school and to, you know, school's really like the kid's job. So it feels like they have to do this thing. But if we broaden our view right now about kind of two different ways, like one, how do we define education? So there's many, many ways for your granddaughter to be learning right now that doesn't necessarily include her sitting at a desk and logging on and, you know, doing her math problems. I know that's probably creates anxiety in your daughter and maybe in yourself, but really thinking about seeing this as an opportunity to learn in different ways. And secondly, you know, resisting schoolwork is one way kids can control their uncontrollable lives. So I would always get underneath, you know, so resisting schoolwork is a behavior, and I'd be really curious about the emotion under the behavior. So, you know, what's going on for her in that moment, and how could you invite a conversation where she can talk about the feelings that are driving the behavior and just see what she says? You know, the other piece of it is, I'm not sure how old she is, but taking your daughter, trying to avoid a power struggle. So instead of saying you have to sit down and it's, you know, the parent versus the kid, kind of joining and empathizing with the child. I know this is so hard. You know, what a weird way to learn. I wouldn't want to sit there all day either. How can we work together to, you know, get enough done and also, you know, like just be a little bit looser and make the school, the external thing that's sort of the rules and the driving force. So if the daughter doesn't do this, if your granddaughter doesn't do her work, she's got to face her teacher, and sort of letting her face her teacher and sitting in that discomfort rather than having the parent kind of play, you know, the mediator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel bad for those kids, though. I mean, most students, I mean, they want to do well. They want to excel. They do care about their work. And, you know, what if you can't because you're not getting the support that you need?
Yeah,
I mean, that
course.
Has to be very, you know, very damaging for a child's self-esteem. Dr. Garrity, what do you say to, like, what children are experiencing with their schoolwork right now?
I think school has been really, really challenging. I agree with what Bobby said. I'd add one thing. I think with testing and the focus on testing, we've really shifted in school to children producing what we want. And we've lost something really essential, which is learning makes you feel better. Right? When children can read, when they can enjoy a book, when they can play with math, when they can learn new things, that actually reduces anxiety because you feel mastery. So it isn't just resisting the control that we don't, none of us have right now. It actually is empowering to be able to be a learner. And I think suddenly our schools just got shocked to their core because, you know, we don't have the structure anymore. And I think a lot of our children have lost that creative energy that comes from within that makes you a good learner. Mm. So I would say to Bob and his granddaughter, spend this summer helping her discover how she likes to learn. And then when she goes back in the fall, they won't have the power struggles and they won't need volleyball as the kind of threat over her. Children need to know that everywhere is a classroom. And this summer, that's going to be one of the biggest challenges because we don't have a lot of activities. So children are going to have to learn to be creative and imaginative and independent in their learning. Hooray.
Let's take in another phone call from one of our listeners in Minneapolis. Sally is on the phone. Good morning, Sally.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm calling about my granddaughter that's 9 years old, and she is experiencing severe, like, panic attacks and being afraid, saying that she can't breathe or that she's choking and wanting her mother to take her to the doctor or do something. You know, she's hyperventilates or chokes, you know, on water and things like that. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, she's had a little difficulty with anxiety prior to this, but it's really gotten bad. Mm. And she did get in contact with a therapist for her, which she started, but she doesn't know how to get her calmed down when she has these situations come up.
Okay. And she's 9 years old, Sally?
She's 9 years old, yeah.
All right. Dr. Garrity, what advice do you have for Sally about her 9-year-old granddaughter?
Well, two things, Sally. One is it sounds like your granddaughter is expressing what many of us are feeling. One of the challenges of COVID is that it's around and many of us wake up and we think, do I have it? So I would urge everyone to help your granddaughter talk about what COVID is, but also to talk about, you know, how to breathe. So there's a kind of breathing, sometimes we call it vagus breathing, which is, you know, we take 4 breaths in and we slowly breathe out 7 or 8 times. And that really can help us with panic. Panic is like a surge of anxiety, almost like a surge of energy, and it does overwhelm our body. So I think we all need to learn breathing ways that slow us down. We need to use our all of our abilities to imagine ourselves in a calmer state and to help your granddaughter, because panic overwhelms people. And again, mastery is what do you do when you get panicky? So I hope her family can really work with her around ways that she can breathe so she knows she doesn't have COVID.
Dr. Wegner, anything that you would add to that?
I'm glad, you know, it sounds like you're really worried about her, and that's great you're paying attention, because, you know, what she's experiencing is very real, and people often with an experience panic feel like they're dying or they're having a heart attack. So I imagine for your granddaughter, that's terrifying. And oftentimes as parents, when they see this, they try to talk the person out of it, like, don't worry, everything's okay, there's nothing to worry about. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, like, not the best approach, because it's really invalidating and just makes the person feel more disconnected. So we think of panic as like a wave. So to Dr. Garrity's point, it's this huge surge of different neurotransmitters that create this major fight or flight response that she's experiencing physically. And it's a wave. So it's more like learning to ride it out and using the metaphor of surfing a wave, letting it come, let it go, kind of normalize her feelings. That's really like a quick and dirty therapeutic like intervention. But I think the thing that would most benefit her is having her parent learn some basic skills around this So either connecting with a therapist in your community or hopping online. We're launching something called nuvanu.com where you can call in and get some coaching around issues like this. And then ultimately, when it feels more comfortable, have your granddaughter connect with a therapist. You know, there's a lot of research that shows like just 12 sessions learning CBT skills for kids at that age can be really, really effective and can actually serve her throughout her life. So we know untreated anxiety can kind of get worse over time. So the sooner that both her parent and she can learn some skills, it's really very, very treatable and will be much more comfortable and kind of serve her for a lifetime.
Again, we're talking about the mental health of children during this COVID-19 pandemic. We have two guests on the line taking your questions. We have Dr. Bobby Wegner with us, a clinical psychologist and lecturer at Harvard University, as well as Dr. Ann Garrity, who's a clinical social worker and a professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. We're taking your phone calls. The number is 651-227-6000. You can also leave me a message or question on Twitter. I'm at Angela Davis, MPR. As we find out ways we can help our kids and the signs that they are in distress right now, I want to talk to another one of our listeners in St. Louis Park. Lee is on the phone. Hi, Lee.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We brought our fifth-grade-year-old son in for his annual checkup, which included a physical, and the pediatrician asked him to fill out kind of the survey. And I was going to fill it out, but I said, you know what, he's old enough to fill it out. And there was a question, how do you feel in general? And they gave options, and one of them was, he feels fearful, or how often do you feel fearful? And it was like daily, weekly, or sometimes. And he selected daily. He feels like something's going to happen to him and be harmful. So the question to that, the pediatrician recommended some therapy, but in general, any thoughts in terms of the impact of maybe too much news or anything at home in regards to schooling as well? I was really surprised that he responded, though, in terms of feeling that way, that something harmful is going to happen to him on a daily basis.
And he's in the fifth grade. How old is he, Lee?
Fifth grade.
Okay. Dr. Wegner, do you want to go first there to respond to Lee?
Sure. Yeah, of course. Well, the good news, Lee, is that you know this and you sound like a really caring guy, and I'm sure you'll find a way to work with it. And, you know, so this would fall also into the category of anxiety. And we think of anxiety in the mental health world as the polio of our generation. So it's really common. I say to patients all the time, it's the common cold of mental illness, and it's very treatable. I think the questions I was thinking as you were speaking were, is this a new fear, like during COVID, or is this, how long has this been happening? How would he rate it? Where does he feel it in his body? And just kind of get curious around his experience of it. But it is, it's an anxiety response. And I think it would be just understanding it more and then learning some basic skills around it.
Dr. Garrity?
Those are excellent advice. I'm also a developmentalist. And there's something about fifth grade, that's 10 and 11, that we see more anxiety. I think looking forward to middle school and looking forward to adolescence. Sometimes anxiety waxes and wanes according to the child's developmental resources. So that might be another thing, Lee, that he's looking forward to a change, and that change is not always just an exciting one. So I would agree. I would ask him, again, how's he feeling or what's he afraid of, and be interested. I think if parents can be interested in children's fears, that's 80% of the problem is allowing the fears to be shared and talked about, and help them then, again, think of mastery. What can he do so that he feels more sturdy? You mentioned about too much news, and I think we're all struggling with how much is enough news, how much is too much news. I think conversations are really, really important so that children are not just hearing news, but able to metabolize it with you so they can make sense of it.
We're talking about mental health of our children and our teenagers and what we can do to help them right now during the pandemic. And Dr. Wegner, I'm sorry, did you want to add something?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Angela. I didn't mean cut you off. But, you know, Lee, the Atlantic just had a really, really wonderful article, and this probably relates to many of the listeners today, on anxiety and our children. And it came out in May of this year. So it's called, let me just look at it quickly, but it might be of interest to you and to many people. It was in the Atlantic, and it really explains kind of where our kids are and what happened to American childhood. But it's all about anxiety, and it might be worth a read for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we have time to get some more phone calls in here. In Maple Grove, Heather's on the phone. Heather's listening. And Heather, go right ahead with your question or story.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead. What's going on with the child in your life?
So I'm actually a senior in high school this year. And one thing I've noticed among my peers is that there's a lot of frustration and anger because we've been promised a lot of ceremonies like graduation, you know, sports, all of those things that come with the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And it feels like since we've been promised them for so many years and it's being taken away and maybe replaced with something that isn't perceived as equal, is that there's a lot of general, like, disappointment, anger. And we know that, you know, you can't have the ceremonies without putting people at risk. So there's also that kind of conflict where you want something, but you know that it comes with its own price. So I was just wondering if you had any advice on how to manage that frustration with the current situation and kind of having your senior year not turn out the way you expected it to.
Heather, how old are you?
I'm 18.
You're 18, class of 2020. So first, I just want to say congratulations for graduating.
Thank you.
So many of us do, we do feel terribly about what has happened to all of the canceled ceremonies. But obviously, the students, you all are dealing with it firsthand. So to our two guests, Dr. Garrity, what advice do you have for our graduating high school seniors?
Oh, I think our high school seniors have to be very brave. And I think Heather is putting words to it. One thing I would suggest to Heather and her peers is that those ceremonies and rituals are outside events, and you have every right to want them. But use your own imagination and your own mind. I'm seeing a lot of seniors create their own rituals. I've seen some amazing videos on TikTok. I think people are using, turning their wishes into very, very creative ways to connect. The second thing I would say is don't be afraid of your sadness. This really is a very sad time, and I'm sorry it's happening for you. And when you can share your sadness with each other, I think you'll find the energy to look forward. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know what the fall is going to be like, but it will get better.
Dr. Wegner, our high school seniors who are experiencing loss and anger.
Yeah, I think that's very normal. And I just, you know, first off, Heather, I applaud you for listening to NPR as a 19-year-old and calling in. That's pretty amazing. But I think what you're really giving words to is grief that a lot of people are feeling. And then with grief, there's a mourning. So, you know, doing a Zoom celebration is just not as good as showing up your graduation ceremony. And I think, like, acknowledging that and sitting with the sadness around it and understanding it is completely valid. It can actually, like, help you through this process. But I think to Dr. Garrity's point too, it's like looking for whatever way that you can create your own rituals, and they're going to be different. So it's kind of on you and your peers to come up with new cool ways to celebrate.
We just have 2 minutes left, but I do want to get to this caller in Fridley. This is Stephanie. And Stephanie, can you quickly describe what you're dealing with?
So we have a first grader who just turned 7 who has been diagnosed with a mood dysregulation disorder called DMDD and also has been diagnosed with ADHD and anxiety in concurrence with that. So we are wondering if there are some resources out there that we could access that would kind of coach us as parents through how to deal with these really explosive and violent tantrums that we're dealing with without exacerbating all the anxiety and big emotions of everybody else in the house right now. Right.
That's Stephanie and Fridley dealing with tantrums. Dr. Wegner, in just the next minute, any suggestions for that?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's really good that you're looking for help for yourself. There's lots of online resources. So, you know, there's there's many things. You can look to local resources. We have something called New that helps parents with issues like this. It's coaching. But really focusing on what you can do as a parent and taking the responsibility off the child in this moment.
All right. Well, we are out of time for the moment, but I want to remind you this conversation is part of NPR's Call to Mind initiative, our effort to foster new conversations about mental health. You can learn more by going to calltomindnow.org. And coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon, I'm leading a discussion that focuses on parents. We just talked about the kids. We're going to focus on parents at 1 o'clock this afternoon. You can still register at nprevents.org. That live webinar is all part of Mental Health Month. Thanks for joining us today. Our two guests, Dr. Bobby Wegner, a clinical psychologist and parenting writer, and Dr. Ann Garrity, a clinical social worker. Thank you so much.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet us at Angela Davis NPR. And if you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.